Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Many groups involved in the culture wars want to look at Nazi Germany and see elements of their opposition in the Nazis. Here on Bob Enyart Live, we've been on the air 5 days a week for 20 years, and it's been a long time since we've taken up this topic. I've read a few books about what went wrong in Germany, like Cleansing the Fatherland, scholarly books like The German Euthanasia Program by Frederick Wortham and Leftism Revisited by Erich von Kuhnelt-Leden. So we've talked about Germany and their racism and their euthanasia and their socialism, their national socialist Nazis. That's left-wing, not right-wing. Socialism is left-wing. Yet to use the Nazis as a weapon against your enemies, university professors have turned National Socialists into what they claim is a right-wing organization. When how could it be right-wing to have a government with socialist economic policies taking care of people from cradle to grave? That's not conservative. It's not right-wing. It's left-wing. Well, one of the topics that we have not addressed on this program for probably 15 years is the homosexual influence on the Third Reich. About 16 years ago, I was given a book, Bob Enyart Live, we were on the air then, like we are now, The Pink Swastika by Scott Lively and his co-author Kevin Abrams. And that book is now out in a fifth edition for the internet. And what an honor to have on with us Scott Lively. Scott, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Good to be here, Bob.
It's been a long time coming because way back with your first edition, I learned about the homosexual influence on the Nazi Party. But thank you for joining us. I'm wondering if we could do two things.
Uh-huh.
If we could talk about the reaction to the book in the last 15 years or so.
Okay.
And then also some of the guts of the argument that there's a significant influence of homosexuality within the foundation and the operation of the Nazi Party.
Well, certainly, and like I said, it's very good to be here, Bob, and I like talking about this book. It's because it really shatters a lot of popular misconceptions that people hold. In fact, when I first encountered this topic, I was the communications director for a Christian political group called the Oregon Citizens Alliance in the state of Oregon. And we were running a ballot measure that would have changed the state constitution to declare homosexuality to be abnormal, unnatural, and perverse.
What year was that?
That was, it was the 92 election cycle. So the election was in 92, the same year that Bill Clinton got elected.
Right.
Black Tuesday.
Before you go on, thank you for doing that. We started airing this program in 1991, and we've come so far from courageous acts like what you guys, Christians, were doing in Oregon, that here in Colorado, we've had Focus on the Family lobbying for bills to establish civil unions for homosexuals.
I know, it's a disgrace. The cowardice in Christianity these days is appalling. It's shameful.
As a result of it, the public square has been co-opted by homosexuals, because the two are mutually exclusive. You're either going to have homosexuality out of the closet or Christianity. You can't have both. One is going to be pushed underground.
The culture war, really, more than anything else, is a conflict between Christians and homosexual political activists. I mean, even the issue of abortion, issue of pornography, issue of divorce, it has its roots in the gay rights movement going back to the late 1940s. A lot of people think that the gay rights movement started here in the U.S. It actually started in Germany in the 1860s. It came to full fruition in the 1920s as Hitler was rising to power, and the Weimar period in Germany was really the peak in Europe. Hitler pretended to be opposed to to the homosexual movement and made some very strong public pronouncements against it. But really, his whole inner circle, and he himself was homosexual. And the movement after World War II jumped the ocean to the United States. And in the late 1940s, a man named Harry Hay started what became known as the American Gay Movement with a group called the Mattachine Society, and began advocating for the legitimization of homosexuality. It wasn't very long after that that Alfred Kinsey, the first major in-the-closet gay rights activist, really launched the nuclear bomb on America with his book Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, that really transformed our entire society. It was the thing that really launched the sexual revolution, although most people wouldn't recognize that until the 60s. It really started in the late 40s.
Kinsey was working at Indiana.
He was a bug scientist who had shifted over into sex research. His work was completely fraudulent.
Completely fraudulent. Do you recall the table in his book, Table
34? Children of Table 34, yeah.
Right, The Children of Table 34, a great book written to expose Kinsey, where he documented children to the youngest ages and their sexual response to sexual stimuli.
Just children that were just, you know, a year, 18 months.
Right
up. Younger.
Right on up.
Studies. And
by him publishing this, he obviously was involved in overt sexual molestation of children, and he's recognized as a hero in the homosexual community and generally in the left-wing world.
Yeah, well, he's really the man who established the sexual revolution. He was a pedophile, he was a homosexual, he was a sadomasochist. He had sexual relations with almost all of his partners that worked with him on his team of sex research. I remember I was 12 years old, and my mom was very liberal. I don't think she knew what was in the book. Gave me a book by Paul Gebhardt, who was one of Kinsey's primary co-workers. It was a book called Boys and Sex. And I remember reading that book at 12 years old, and it actually legitimized and advocated sex with animals, and that this was a normal thing. This is the perversion that was being pushed
by the leaders and people who are heroes here in Colorado, up the street from our studio, Boulder, Colorado. They once gave the key to the city to poet Allen Ginsberg.
Another pedophile.
Who is, right, an advocate of sex with children.
Ginsberg also is a person that acknowledged that the Nazis were run by homosexuals. He actually admitted that in a court case that was being held against one of his buddies, William Burroughs. And the judge, when he was being questioned, the judge actually put questions to Ginsberg, and Ginsberg came out and said that he acknowledged the homosexuality of the Nazi leaders.
You mentioned the Weimar Republic real quickly. When that's come up on this show over the years, we've condemned the Weimar Constitution and its left-wing influence on a culture. And there in Germany was, I think you could argue, in Europe, it was at the height of science, culture, art, music, education, everything, all the ultimate values of the left. But it was bankrupt morally as far as turning its back against God.
It was San Francisco times four, but it was across the whole country. And there's a book that somebody sent to me when I was doing the preparation, early preparation for the fifth edition. Actually, I think I've had some of it in the fourth edition as well. It's called Voluptuous Panic, and it's a pictorial document. It's a book about the sexual license and anarchy, really, that was taking place during that period. You know, they had, and this is, we've also documented this in the Pink Swastika, that during the Weimar period of the 1920s, that there were massive transvestite balls where men dressed as women and women dressed as men would go, and everyone would dance with each other. They had such rampant prostitution in the cities that it wasn't enough just to go and find a hooker. There were hookers, there were teams of hookers, mother and daughter, father and son. Everything you can imagine was on the street at that time. And this, and it was considered, you know, it was risque, but it was, this was the culture.
Right.
And that was what, you know, Hitler actually was part of a different faction of the German gay subculture. If I could just step back for just a second. The grandfather of the gay rights movement was a man named Karl Heinrich Ulrichs, and he came out with what became known as the third sex theory of homosexuality. He said that male homosexuals were really female souls trapped inside men's bodies, and lesbians were really men trapped in women's bodies.
Yeah.
God had made some kind of mix-up, and that these people, therefore, it shouldn't be treated as a moral problem, it should be treated as a medical condition. He's the person that coined the term homosexual. Out of his efforts came this whole movement to legitimize homosexuality and to repeal paragraph 175 of the German legal code that criminalized sodomy. His organization was very offensive to the other faction of male homosexuals, the ones that are oriented toward masculinity. Because when you, if you come out with a theory that says that all homosexuals are really women trapped inside men's bodies,
right,
then you're only catering to one half of the spectrum of deviants.
Yeah, and you guys argue that the Communist Party attracted effeminate homosexuals, whereas the Nazis attracted the masculine homosexuals.
Well, it was the masculine homosexuals who really created the fascist movement in Germany. They were following the model that had already been set in Italy, but in Germany it was completely controlled by the homosexuals. They wanted to revive the sort of Spartan male warrior cult that that the ancient Greeks had, the Spartans had, and they worked at that. And out of that, that's what the Nazi Party really was. It was an expression of masculine-oriented homosexuality. Now, the masculine, what we call the butches, hated the femmes. And they were not only aligned with conflicting political parties, they also, they hated each other. The males, the masculine, the butches, called the femmes kummerlings, puny beings. And, you know, to them, masculinity was the ultimate expression of humanity. And a man who would intentionally reject his own masculinity was subhuman.
And dress like a woman.
Yes.
Right.
Or even just act like a woman, just have feminine mannerisms.
Right.
To reject masculinity was like the ultimate insult to these men, and so they hated these guys. And to make matters worse, they were all not just aligned with the Communist Party, they were all under the umbrella of Ulrich's organization that he started called the Scientific Humanitarian Committee. That was taken over when Ulrich died by Magnus Hirschfeld, who was a fairly well-known figure in Germany. He ran the Sex Research Institute of Berlin. And the femmes had the power in the government. And anybody who got arrested for sex crimes in Germany was sent to the institute, basically, for counseling, you know, for therapy.
Hmm.
And so all these Nazis who were forever getting busted, they were always messing with teenage boys and doing all the other things. They were getting arrested. They were forced to have to go to the to their enemies in the feminine branch of the movement. And as a matter of fact, you know, when you know that picture that we all see there in the newsreels of the burning pile of books, right, they didn't do this multiple times. I mean, there may have been a few, but the one that's the focus of all the attention happened on May 10th, 1933. At the top of the stack of the books were Thomas Mann's works and things like that that they said were culturally detrimental to German society. But the bulk of that stack were the files of the Sex Research Institute of Berlin. The Nazis were burning the incriminating evidence of you know, that Ludwig Lenz, who was the assistant director of the institute, said they had over 40,000 documents related to perversions of the Nazis. And that was the reason why their institute had been attacked 4 days earlier on May 6th, 1933.
Now, Scott, when people hear this, people in the audience who this is brand new to, they'll hear you and me, and they recognize that we disapprove of homosexuality. We believe it's a perversion. God made us male and female, as Jesus said. But they'll want to hear the opinions of others. And on your website, thepinkswastika.com, perhaps I'm jumping ahead too far, but there's a book, The Story of Hitler's SS, and the New York Times reviewed this book as a monumental achievement. The Order of the Death's Head. Could you tell us about clear statements in that book about the stormtroopers, the SS, the brown shirts, and their homosexual recruiting tools?
Well, that book was written by a German journalist, an award-winning journalist, in the 1960s, who wrote this book called The Order of the Death's Head. It was about the SS. The Death's Head was the symbol of the SS. He wrote it in German. It was translated into English in like 71 or something like that. And it's one of a couple hundred sources that we used. They're all very solid primary and secondary sources. But this particular man is especially impressive because he's a prize-winning journalist, and he writes in the book that the Nazi Party, the early Nazis, were recruiting boys into homosexuality from the Munich high schools. You know, this is an outrageous claim. To make this without having support would just be very hard to swallow. But
right. This
man, not only is he a highly respected journalist, but his information is being taken from the Munich court records themselves.
Right.
So he's going to the archives of the court records to pull out the facts about the Nazis' perversions. And that's the level of documentation that we have
right.
in the Pink Swastikas. 400 pages.
He writes about Ernst Röhm, and I only know this because of your research and digging through these 200 sources, but Ernst Röhm, head of the Stormtroopers, the SA, who was a homosexual himself, and they would bring these young boys from the high schools and bring them to a homosexual bar, a gay bar, and they would begin to brainwash them into the Nazi worldview.
It actually, and this is even later in the process, around the turn of the last century, it really got started around 1902. There was an organization called the Gemeinschaft der Eigenen, the community of the elite. And these were the philosophers that laid the groundwork for what would become the Nazis. The Nazi Party didn't actually emerge as a separate entity until early 1920s. Originally, it was a political party started by the nationalists. They just called it the German Workers' Party. And then Hitler and Röhm took it over and then renamed it the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And the entire staff, it was a political organization, but it was staffed by these thugs that had been part of the stormtroopers. Ernst Röhm was the head of what was known as the SA, the Sturmabteilung, and he had taken over from a man named Gerhard Rossbach. Rossbach had actually recruited Ernst Röhm into homosexuality. Rossbach was the one who invented the brown shirts. People may remember from high school history class, if they still teach this stuff, that when Germany lost World War I, the Allies imposed the Treaty of Versailles on them. Very, very strict requirements, including limiting the German military to 100,000 men in arms. And the German military was like a major source of employment and had been for decades and decades. So what the nationalists did is they preserved all of these, all their military structure in private organizations that didn't have weapons, sports clubs, et cetera, and they called many of them Freikorps, Free Corps. They were staffed by the former junior officers of the military. That way they could keep all of the men organized in a somewhat military structure. Well, there was one Freikorps, it was called the Rossbachbund, and it was Gerhard Rossbach's Freikorps. And what distinguished his from all the other ones, all of his soldiers were all homosexual, and that's why they hung out together. It was the Rossbachbund was a group of homosexuals. The main thing that distinguished them in terms of what people could see was where all the rest of the Freikorps continued to wear the gray uniforms of World War One. Rossbach went to the Army surplus stores and got brown uniforms from the troops that they no longer had in Africa. Germany lost its colonies in Africa. All these brown uniforms were now in the Army surplus stores. And so he suited all of his people in these brown uniforms, and that's why they were known as the brown shirts.
The brown shirts.
All of the brown shirts at the beginning, they were all homosexual, and they were all part of this Rossbach entity.
Hmm. It probably has no relationship, but as far as the generation of that. But Hitler was superstitious, and he had the brown house, and he had Eva Braun, his girlfriend. But you said earlier that Hitler himself was homosexual. I remember from your book 15 years ago, just little shreds of information that might substantiate that. How do you defend that claim?
Well, in the first three editions, we didn't assert that Hitler was homosexual. We didn't have enough evidence in our hands.
I seem to recall something about he was an artist painting postcards.
He was sort of in the bohemian culture of Germany. He was Hitler was a male prostitute as a teenager in Munich and Vienna. He lived in a flop house that was mostly homosexuals and street hustlers, and that's how he got connected up with a lot of these military figures.
Now, is this true or false, my recollection from back in the 90s, that he painted postcards and he would sell them in like a homosexual subculture?
I don't remember that specific detail.
All right.
But the reason we didn't state that Hitler was, I mean, I was fairly well convinced myself that he was a homosexual just because he fit the profile, but there wasn't enough evidence for us to stick our neck out and say clearly he was when, you know, we couldn't defend it.
Right.
Until Lothar Machten, is a German historian, wrote The Hidden Hitler back, must be 7 or 8 years ago now. The sole focus of that book was the homosexuality of Adolf Hitler. And this man had access to all the records, and it's a very persuasive case, and he lays it all out there. And that book is available. You can find that on Amazon or whatever, but if we actually have cited the very best information, so if you read the Pink Swastika, you're going to get the best.
The Hidden Hitler.
Had. For the fourth edition, we dramatically expanded that chapter with all these citations from Lothar Machten, and we're able to say conclusively, yes, Hitler was homosexual. He was really more pansexual.
Right? Which is so true for so many homosexuals. In this country, so many homosexuals have been married. And then they divorce their wives and go on to a homosexual lifestyle. When this program began to air back in 91, we had a young man on the show who was dying of AIDS. And he said that the Colorado Department of Health listed him as getting AIDS, HIV, from a needle as a drug user. And as he told his testimony becoming a Christian on the show, he was a homosexual prostitute in Las Vegas. He had been gang raped by a group of homosexuals. And I asked him, why would the government say you got HIV from a needle injection when you were a homosexual prostitute? And he said, you know, I always wonder that myself. And so obviously the official record in a lot of ways is biased to hide or suppress the homosexual influence on crime, and in this case, Germany's falling into the corruption of Nazism.
Well, you find that in every aspect of dealing with the homosexual issue, you're going to find deception, misrepresentation, outright lies. Every aspect. Doesn't matter what it is. This has been my primary focus of ministry for more than 20 years. If people listening in your audience knew what I know, their brains would explode.
Oh, my.
It's so outrageous.
So, Scott, we are about out of time. Perhaps we can do this again in about a month?
Oh, I'd love to.
You would? Okay, I'm thrilled because we obviously have just barely touched the surface. The book is The Pink Swastika, and you could go online to thepinkswastika.com. You can get this from Amazon?
Well, the best place to buy this is on WorldNetDailyBooks. Now, the fourth edition is what's in print. The fifth edition is in progress. We don't have all that much of it up on the website, but there's enough of it there for you to be able to get a good feel for what it is.
Yeah.
And frankly, everything that's published on the fifth edition website is straight out of the fourth edition. We haven't really augmented it much.
Sure, so it's worth it to get the fourth edition from WorldNet Daily.
Yeah,
and of
course, having a special now, too, that you can get the book for like $5 if you sign up
subscribe.
For the magazine.
Yeah, that would be great. And then when you're done with the book, you hand it to somebody to spread the warning. Scott, before you go, we have a minute left. Are you aware of Colorado a few years back passing what was called Senate Bill 200?
I don't remember 200. I remember Amendment. Was it Amendment 2?
Amendment 2, which was to restrain the homosexual agenda.
I remember that. We were actually consulting with the leaders at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's when Focus on the Family, actually, their slogan for that campaign was equal rights for homosexuals. Equal rights, not special rights.
Right. The special rights argument was actually invented by my boss, Lon Maybon, in Oregon. He was a brilliant man, very dedicated Christian.
Well, I think that strategy has backfired because it led Christian groups like Focus on the Family to campaign for equal rights for homosexuals, which I think backfired because that implies
it's not criminal.
Well,
they should know better than
criminal.
That anyway. They can't take refuge in that argument.
Yeah.
That's just foolish.
Yeah. So, all right, Scott, this will be it'll be great to follow up with you.
All right, Bob.
God bless you, sir. Appreciate it. All right, that's Scott Lively, thepinkswastika.com, and our website is KGov, KGov.com.